WNYC Studios is supported by the community of writers, presenting live online short courses in the Writer's Annex. Upcoming in 2024, Sylvia Plath, James Joyce's Ulysses, and Emily Dickinson. Instructors include Victoria Chang, Robert Haas, Brenda Hillman, Peter Orner, and Matthew Zapruder. Learn more at communityofwriters.org.
Today's episode is brought to you by Empower. It doesn't matter how much money you have, we all have money questions. Empower is here to answer those questions so you don't have to worry. Take control of your financial future with a real-time dashboard and real live conversations to empower what's next. Start today at empower.com.
Listener supported, WNYC Studios.
As we wrap up this month and get ready for the holidays, the new year, and all of that, we should pause and take some stock of a momentous 8 years coming to a close, the end of the administration of Barack Obama. Like so many people at the magazine, I've been writing about Obama for quite some time, and I'm going to get a chance now to talk with two very tough-minded political observers, Ryan Lizza and Amy Davidson, staff writers who cover politics for The New Yorker. And I think it goes without saying that we're talking from the vantage point of right now. We're not trying to predict exactly what happens after January 20th and Donald Trump takes the oath of office. We have all been, I think it's fair to say, covering in one way or another Barack Obama for the better part of a decade. Ryan wrote the seminal profile of Barack Obama and his years as a politician in Chicago. Amy has been writing so many columns about Barack Obama. When she first began writing them and I encountered the president, he looked at me very sternly and said, "Who is this Amy Davidson person and why is she in my face so much?" So we all have a fair amount of experience writing about this president. And I recall an anecdote before he became president. And Barack Obama was walking around a gallery of portraits of the presidents. And he said to the person he was with, he said, "I don't want to be just one of those normal presidents. I want to be a consequential president." When we think of consequential presidents, we think of Ronald Reagan on the right, Franklin Delano Roosevelt on the left, Teddy Roosevelt, Lincoln, and all the rest. And I want to begin with that. Do you think it's a lock that Barack Obama will be considered by historians as a consequential president?
I do, actually. I do. And I could just start by telling one quick story. I first met him in early 2004 when he was a state senator in Springfield, Illinois. And I remember walking into this committee room to watch him oversee the very important issue of whether a toy known as the yo-yo water ball was too dangerous for kids to purchase. That was early 2004. He would be president, elected president 4 years later. But after that yo-yo water ball hearing, we walked around Springfield and he showed me some of the sites, some of the sites where that Lincoln made famous in Springfield, including a window where Abe Lincoln allegedly crawled out of to avoid a tough vote. And I asked him what the Democratic Party, the future of the Democratic Party is. And even then, what was on his mind was that Bill Clinton's presidency, whether it was his own fault or the Republican opposition's fault, had descended into small ball, and that progressives and Democrats needed to come up with a governing philosophy that could tackle big, big problems. So that was all the way back when he was not even a U.S. senator. He was thinking about how the Democratic Party could achieve big things. And you don't get to do that unless the circumstances are right, and timing is everything in politics, and he came along at the right time. And I'm sure he didn't think it was a great thing at the time, but the financial crisis of 2008 and the sort of devastation of the Bush presidency and the massive Democratic margins that were swept in with Barack Obama in 2008 really did give him a historical opportunity. And he used it. Those first 2 years will go down in history on par with FDR's most successful legislative period and LBJ's.
Whoa. Let's pause on that.
Yeah.
So that was probably the most dramatic opening of a presidency in American history, which is FDR's. And you think that the Obama experience in the first year or two was the equivalent?
I wouldn't say it's the same, but the fact that he passed the Affordable Care Act, which changes one's relationship with insurance companies. You can no longer be denied insurance because of a pre-existing condition. That's important. The Dodd-Frank reform bill that really did change a lot of the rules of the way the Wall Street works. That's a big deal. An $800 billion stimulus that first year that was stuffed with Democratic priorities that would have made, Bill Clinton tried to pass a $16 billion stimulus when he was president and barely got it through. So I think the enormity of those first 2 years often gets lost because there was so much going on. There was so much legislation being moved that we forget how important some of that stuff is. Throw in the automakers' bailouts. Now, things ground to a halt after that, and there's no doubt that those first 2 years produced a dramatic conservative backlash that defined the next six. But those two alone, I think, mean that he will be regarded in that pantheon that you talked about at the beginning, David.
And yet, those first 2 years are often pointed to as the source of so much resentment that the economic rescue program by the Obama administration is often pointed to as the source of white working class resentment because jobs were not the priority so much as financial repair, that the repair was done by people from Goldman Sachs, et cetera, et cetera. You know the outline of the campaign message in this last go round. Amy, how do you assess those first 2 years in particular?
I think that Ryan pointed to two really important moments of forgetfulness that. And things are sometimes strangely harder to remember when you're closer to them than when you're farther away. I think we might find that with exactly how precipitous the moment was and how much was accomplished in terms of stabilizing the U.S. economy and getting it back to a place of building. But also the forgetfulness of what Ryan mentioned, that moment in 2004 where this guy was going to be president in 4 years. And that's not just about a remarkable personal story. It's also a reminder about the possibilities of politics and the upsets of politics. It's a pity almost that the Democratic Party in the years that followed kind of forgot that, as if Obama was a one-off and that idea that politics had unexpected possibilities was something that they could really, really push and build on.
Ryan, we hear a lot about the temperament of Barack Obama, a certain kind of dignity that's now being contrasted all the time with someone who tweets about, a steel union president or has things to say on Twitter at the middle of the night. There's a big contrast between the Trump temperament and the Obama temperament. By the way, both of whom won national elections.
As Obama would say, twice.
Yes. But in the Obama case, was there any downside to that temperament of restraint, subtlety, elegance, and the rest when it came to politics itself?
Yeah, I think that's a great question because if there's one downside to it, you might argue that Obama is cautious to a fault. We'll probably talk some foreign policy, and I think that's where that may have come into play a little bit more. But I think there's a decent argument actually from progressives that he didn't take advantage enough of the majorities he had in his first 2 years.
What issues in particular?
You know, the two big ones, and look, there's only so much bandwidth that Congress can, Congress has. So the response to my argument would be no, nothing else could have passed in those first 2 years. But the two big domestic priorities that he had that never had another chance were immigration reform and the climate change bill, the cap and trade bill. I've argued in the past that he didn't push hard enough on the climate change bill and he actually could have passed it. Others who know the Senate very well think that's wrong and that there's no way some of those coal state Democratic senators ever would have come around on that issue.
This is an existential issue. I mean, no matter what we're hearing from the new EPA person under Trump and so many climate change deniers, I think it is widely understood that this issue, come 20 years from now or 50 years from now, we will look back and rue the day that we didn't pay sufficient attention to this Did Barack Obama move quickly enough, or did we fiddle while Rome burns?
I think that there is nobody on this planet who has done enough, really, for this. I mean, maybe a few scientists, but, you know, he can point to things, to boxes he's checked on climate change, but no, and to make it durable, to make it something that even Donald Trump can't roll back, to get it going. I mean, he's been mocked for saying that climate change is a national security priority. He obviously believes it. It's just, I think we're all going to be a little bit ashamed as a generation, as a country, as these things go on. Has he done enough on climate change? Nobody has done enough on climate change.
And it really is the trickiest political problem, because it's short-term pain, and you do have to admit there's pain associated with addressing climate change economically, for a gain that to most Americans won't really be seen or felt, except that we will avert catastrophe. And that's such a difficult political case to make, because, as you both know, nothing gets done in Washington unless there's an acute, immediate emergency.
But then the question is, what is with these pathetic people?
This is the human question about politics. And we heard it during the campaign. This politician has no choice. This politician has to do this. He has this position in the Republican Party, so he has to back Donald Trump, or he has to say that. This sense of what idea that politicians
have. How is that
have,
not pathetic?
It's utterly pathetic. And it's something that has to be challenged at every turn, and I think in the next 4 years has to be more. And I would put this on, there are areas where Obama has suffered from this too, not just in climate change. Guantanamo. The idea that it can't be closed politically.
But I'm going to risk your ire and maybe those of our listeners to saying Guantanamo, well, it's absolutely an issue that's deeply troubling when in legal terms, civil liberties terms, we're talking about a very small handful of people and not an existential threat to the planet.
I would agree in that you could say that about almost anything in climate change. I mean, you could say that about Obamacare and climate change and on some levels. But I wouldn't underplay Guantanamo. When we talk about Guantanamo, we're not just talking about X number of people in this base.
You're talking about principles of
we're not just talking about principles either. We're talking about legal mechanisms that have been put in place and in some ways fortified under Obama. We have now a process for indefinite detention without trial. You don't need a lot of people in Guantanamo for Guantanamo to matter.
You make an excellent point. Now, Barack Obama came to the presidency and managed to win in his campaign against Hillary Clinton in 2008 with a great difference on one issue. It was Iraq. It was foreign policy. And he leaves office now claiming to have ended the wars in Iraq, in Afghanistan, and yet the legacy is much murkier than that. We have a situation in Afghanistan that's incredibly perilous. Iraq, we are right now helping in an attempt to regain the second biggest city in Iraq, Mosul. ISIS is still not defeated, and ISIS 2.0 will probably look a lot like al-Qaeda as a kind of underground terrorist organization with attacks abroad. Syria, where we decided to opt out for all the reasons we know and understand, is a catastrophe of the largest proportion. Not only is the country destroyed and fractured and there's 500,000 people dead, there's the resulting immigration has destabilized politics throughout not only the Middle East, but the European continent, and changed politics there and pushed it to the right. How can Barack Obama leave office, in your view, and just feel that retrenchment vis-a-vis the Bush administration and the American tradition is an unalloyed success?
Yeah, I think this is foreign policy is the area where caution has served him well in a number of cases, but he was cautious to a fault in some other important ones, including the ones you mentioned. You know, his entire political identity when he came into office on foreign policy was that he was the guy who was against the Iraq War.
He called it a stupid war.
Stupid war, in that famous speech when he was a state senator. And I do think that that, you know, that reputation pushed him, you know, to not take as seriously what would happen if he pulled out of Iraq prematurely. And I do think that the, you know, there's a credible argument that ISIS's rise was enabled by the vacuum that was created. I mean, if for no other reason, the fact that we had no more leverage over Maliki as he pursued that an awful sectarian campaign that only helped ISIS. I know that, you know, I know the White House disagrees strongly with that assessment, but I do.
Well, what the White House will say, what Barack Obama will say, and there's legitimacy to this point, is that just in conventional foreign policy establishment terms, the only way to for the United States to assert itself legitimately is through the use of force, and we are going to break that pattern because that pattern has sent us into all kinds of conflicts that we are now deeply sorry for, whether it's Vietnam or Iraq or the rest. Why are they wrong? Why is Obama wrong? Obama says that his source, one of his sources of greatest pride, was to put down the so-called red line and then not cross it after the chemical weapons moment.
It's a tricky thing. Now, one thing, it's become sort of a shorthand that Obama was unwilling to enforce the red line. But remember how he did it. He said, if you want me to do this, Congress has to be behind me. And Congress was like, oh, actually, we thought maybe you could just do it without.
So that you would take the
heat. And so in that way, it was also a statement about executive power and war waging. And that's part of the legacy, and not only the fact that our hospitals aren't full of American soldiers who were wounded in Syria, in a war in Syria that didn't take.
Amy and Ryan, what was Obama's biggest accomplishment and his biggest failure?
Well, preventing a real breakdown after 2008 and coming in and doing it quietly, doing it efficiently. You know, we're stronger now than we were in 2008, and I think better able to deal with Donald Trump. If we had a demagogue like Donald Trump with, you know, much higher unemployment, much greater poverty, we'd be in a more dangerous place. At the same time, inequality has to be the greatest
failure. Ryan?
And I think the biggest accomplishment are just the things that he prevented from happening. And, you know, it's hard to argue a counterfactual, but the fact that the economic crisis in 2008, that he did not worsen that, the fact that we did not go to war with certain states where if someone like Bush had been in office, we might have. And I think his biggest failure, and I say this as someone who's very sympathetic to why he failed, but was not putting in place a climate change policy that is sure to outlast the next president.
Amy Davidson, Ryan Lizza, thank you so much.
Thanks, David.
Thanks, David.
You can read everything Amy Davidson and Ryan Lizza have written about the Obama administration at newyorkerradio.org. I hope you've got a few months to get through it all.
Support for today's show comes from Deloitte. What does the future look like? By melding business acumen and innovative technology, Deloitte can help you build the future only you can imagine. They can help engineer solutions for your business reality today and your vision for tomorrow to get you to a world where you don't just dream it, you build it. See how you can engineer advantage with Deloitte at deloitte.com/us/engineeringadvantage.